Gunarnava called this morning from Australia. He and Vishani couldn't come today. They were Gunarnava. He asked that something from his offerings that were made for the 40th anniversary be read today, so I'll read that first. Surabhi came to Vrindavan and we joined together as a team. We became incredibly close. We were almost like Siamese twins, joined at the hip. We hardly had any room in the hut, but he had made a drawing board and he had all kinds of drawing materials. Being Dutch, they're very pedantic, and he had all these pencils in his kurta pocket. They were all different types of pencils and pens, very fine. He was preparing himself to draw the Krishna Balaram Mandir for the very first time. Prabhupada wanted a visual. He wanted to see how it's going to be. Prabhupada gave ideas to Surabhi, but there was nothing set in stone. So then all of a sudden, Surabhi's pencil started moving on the paper. And honestly, I'm not exaggerating, this is exactly what happened. He did not once use an eraser. He never tried to rub anything out. His pen lifted off the paper, but he never said, "Oh, why did I do that?" and start rubbing it out. After about 3 hours of working solidly in that little hut, a design emerged, and it was the design that you see now with some very slight modification. The pressure was on constantly because Prabhupada would say, "So have you finished? You are not finished?" Surabhi ran over to Prabhupada, who was also staying in a hut just a few yards away, and he showed it to Prabhupada. And when Prabhupada looked at that design, there was a huge smile on his face and his eyes were sparkling. He was so pleased with that design. Because the cement was so difficult to procure, Prabhupada decided to stay in Vrindavan. And when Prabhupada stays somewhere to really push something, it happens. There's no question of it not happening. Eventually we got cement, we got a quota. It was 1,600 and something bags of cement. It was a huge quota, and we had lots of trucks coming. It was do or die. We had to get it all in while it was available. There was no question, "Oh, we'll pick it up daily, we'll have some now, some tomorrow." No, it all had to come on that day. The weight of cement is very heavy. We built two or three godowns to put the cement in because there were so many bags. Prabhupada said to me, "You have to stay outside and you have to count every single bag." It was really hot and dusty. The delivery guys were gray. They were covered in powder because it leaks through the gunny sacks. As soon as they drop it down or pick it up, there were clouds of dust. So I got covered in dust as well. I became gray too. It started about 9 in the morning, and probably about 6:30, 7 o'clock in the evening, we managed to get it all in. Non-stop, truck after truck after truck after truck. Prabhupada had the invoices for the cement, and he knew exactly how many bags were supposed to be in those go-downs. I didn't know. I just had to count, and it had to be smack on or else. Prabhupada called me in his room, and I was covered with dust. I said, "Prabhupada, no, you come. I came in, and he said, "So how many bags?" I said, 1,600, whatever it was. And he said, "Exactly." Somehow or other, I got it right. I got many, many things wrong, but this was okay. I started to go out, and he said, no, you stay here. He was having a discussion with some sannyasis. I didn't feel I should be in the room. I was covered in cement dust. But he just let me listen into the conversation he was having with these sannyasis. That was, for me, a very striking moment. I felt that was really wonderful. So we're sitting here today by the extreme efforts of just a small handful of devotees, the construction team, the collection team, the team of the devotees who got their lordships carved. And this beautiful temple is the result of the extremely hard endeavor of these very few devotees who were living here and struggling. But behind them were thousands of devotees all over the world who were collecting. Now, Guru Kripa, he explained to us in Japan that what actually happened was their collections, because our printer was there, Dai Nippon, they would give the money to the printer because BBT had to pay for the books. So the money collected in Japan would go to the printer, Dai Nippon, and he would get a receipt from Dai Nippon, $100,000. His quota for collecting for this temple was $100,000 per month, Prabhupada gave him. You can imagine what that means. That means $3,000 a day these poor boys had to collect from Japan. It was so difficult, so difficult. So he would regularly bring these little slips of paper and hand them to Prabhupada wherever he was in the world, because this was proof that he had done his quota of $100,000. In the meantime, all of the devotees all over the world were buying books from BBT in Los Angeles. That was the only BBT we had at the time. And the BBT explained to every devotee that every book you distribute equals one brick in this Vrindavan temple. So the devotees were so inspired. That meant that every book they were distributing, that money was being used to build this temple. It was a great inspiration for the preaching, for the book distribution. So instead of the BBT paying Dai Nippon, Guru Kripa and his small group, maybe 8-10 boys, they were paying the printer. And that way BBT was able to legally send all the money here to print to build the temple. So it was a very... that's why I'm telling this. So this temple was built by the endeavor of the entire ISKCON society. Jai. Especially the book distributors and collectors. So what happened was, we know that Prabhupada, he appeared September 2nd, 1896. And his father, being a pure devotee, Gaur Mohan Day, he prayed to all of the sadhus that, please make my son a servant of Radharani. So in 1922, he met Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, who requested him to preach in the English language. In 1933, Prabhupada accepted initiation, but it took until Prabhupada was 58 years old before he accepted sannyas and was able to dedicate his entire life to the mission that Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati had given him. He was only present with Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati for 4 years after his initiation, because Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati disappeared in 1934. And again, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati requested him, you're very intelligent, I want you to preach in the English language. So Prabhupada did that. His mission, his assignment, was the world. He had to preach in English. And he did that by going to America in 1965, establishing ISKCON 1966. But then in 1967, he had a stroke. That was in May. And anyone who lives here in Vrindavan knows that May, June, it's intensely hot here. It's so hot that it's just like when you turn iron into steel by tempering it with heat. So anyone who stays here during May and June, they become toughened. That heat goes into them. That's why it's the most wonderful time to stay here. So Prabhupada... that's why a lot of us are so hot-tempered. So Prabhupada, having just had his stroke, he told the devotees, I have to go back to Vrindavan, because he knew about how the heat would help him recover. So he went back with only one disciple, Kirtanananda. They stayed at the Radha Damodar temple. And during this time of recuperation, Prabhupada was meditating that now I'm fulfilling the order of my spiritual master. But just to preach in America or all over the world, that's not sufficient. I have to bring them back to Vrindavan. So he desired to create what he called the American House, or sometimes he called it the Indian American House. And this was where the seed was planted that Prabhupada make a temple in Vrindavan. He returned to America in 1967, and as we heard, he, along with the devotees, he made many temples in America. Finally, he made his world headquarters in Los Angeles. One day in 1970, because Prabhupada was calling all the devotees for training, it was his training ground there. The pujaris, the temple presidents, they all were sent to Los Angeles to get their training there. But Prabhupada was standing in front of Rukmini Dwarkadish one day. Prabhupada recounted this to Tamal Krishna Maharaj and Brahmananda just before he disappeared, 2 months before he disappeared. No one knew about this before. He said that I was standing in front of Rukmini Dwarkadish, and suddenly Dwarkadish said to me, "Go back to India." And Prabhupada objected. He said, "I'm not going to go back to India. I'm here in America. I'm doing what I'm supposed to, what my Guru Maharaj told me to do. My godbrothers are preaching in India. I'm preaching here." And Dwarkadish told him, "No, I want you to go back to India, and I want you to make a temple. And that temple will be 100 times better than what you've made here in Los Angeles." So Prabhupada had to follow the order of Dwarkadish Maharaj. So August 1970, without any plan, nothing, Prabhupada left Los Angeles, went to Japan, at that time Sudama was there, and from Japan went to Calcutta and began his tour of the World Sankirtan Party. He called devotees from all over the world. Each devotee was supposed to donate one brahmachari, or one devotee. So they all gathered, they went to Bombay, some went to Calcutta. And Prabhupada was contemplating, where will that one temple be? Should it be Mayapur? Because first Prabhupada started to make the temple in Mayapur. Should it be Vrindavan, which is the spiritual headquarters of the entire universe? Or should it be Bombay, which is the financial center of India, where the most influential people live? So he was thinking, should I make the temple in which of these three places? But Krishna, because Prabhupada was so surrendered to him, Krishna gave him temples in all three places. So this Vrindavan temple was the fruit of Prabhupada's surrender to Dwarkadish, Sri Sri Rukmini Dwarkadish. And Prabhupada worked tirelessly. He came in 1970 with the devotees. He toured all over India. He didn't bring them to Vrindavan first, which all of us would want to do. We'd run to Vrindavan. He took them all over India for a year, going to all the different cities, Indore, Gorakhpur, Surat, everywhere. You can see the pictures. And finally, November 1971, he brought the devotees here for just 5 days from Delhi. They rented a bus. Prabhupada's car broke down. Prabhupada had to go in the bus with the devotees. And for 5 days, he took them on a beautiful tour, whirlwind tour, of the holy places in Vrindavan. Now, it was 1971. He had sent Gurudas earlier, 1970, to look and see where he could get land or a temple donated. Gurudas was aiming for the big palace at the Keshi Ghat that now one of Prabhupada's disciples owns, because the Maharaj of Bharatpur, he had offered to donate that palace to Prabhupada. At first he offered to donate it, later he wanted to sell it. So that plan fell through. His first plan was to have it at Radha Damodar Temple, but the Goswamis weren't interested. Second plan was to have it at Keshi Ghat. That fell through. Finally, Prabhupada, because Prabhupada was staying at Radha Damodar at that time, and there were many influential people living there. You'll see behind Loy Bazaar, now it's not so prominent, there's an area called Govindabagh. And that was where all the wealthiest people in Vrindavan lived. So there was a family, the Sarafs, Kashi Prasad Saraf. And he and his pious wife would come to hear Prabhupada at Radha Damodar. They would invite the devotees to their home at Govinda Bagh. And Prabhupada once confided in Kashi Prasad that, "I'm looking for land. I want to build a temple for my foreign disciples." And Kashi Prasad told him that, "I have some land. I bought some land, but it's far from the city. I don't know if it would be right for your plans. So Prabhupada said, "I want to go see it." Immediately they arranged the car and they drove out here. When Prabhupada saw where this land is, he said, "Oh, this is Ramanreti." It was complete jungle at that time. He said, "This is Ramanreti, where Krishna and Balaram used to herd their cows." He said, "This is what I want. I want to make a Krishna Balaram temple on this land. Can you donate it or can I buy it?" So Kashi Prasad said, "Well, I can't do anything because the land is in the name of my wife." They're more Marwaris. "And my wife isn't here, she's in Guwahati." Now, by the way, this same family donated the temple that we have in Guwahati. They're so pious. So, March of 1972, Gita Devi returned from Guwahati. Immediately, she agreed to donate the land to Prabhupada because she was a great devotee of Radha and Krishna. They had 24-hour kirtan in their house for 60 years, 40 years, 60 years. Just nonstop. They had beautiful Radha Kunja Bihari deities. So when Prabhupada requested her, she said, "Yes, you can take the whole land and build your temple." But Kashi Prasad, he wanted the first 26 feet of land for his commercial purposes. He wanted to put shops there or build a petrol pump. He wasn't sure yet what he wanted to do. So he stopped his wife from donating where Prabhupada's Samadhi is now. So one day, secretly, Srila Prabhupada called Gita Devi Saraf to his home. And he said, "Your Lala, he's your son. And the mother is more affectionate to the son than to the husband. So you're building a temple for your Lala, for Krishna. How can you have a temple without a gate in the front? You want us to have a little door on the side for your baby Krishna?" So Gita Devi, she immediately signed a paper and turned over the front portion of the land to Prabhupada. But her husband was not happy about that at all. This comes later. So now Prabhupada had the whole land. Prabhupada had them build a beautiful fountain, and we made gorgeous gardens in the front to secure the land. And the temple was at the place where originally Kashi Prasad Saraf had given the property. From here it was 1 acre, the temple, and then behind the international guest house. So Prabhupada was pushing the devotees like anything because there were many other people who wanted this land. In particular, one of our neighbors. I won't mention their name. So when they heard that Gita Devi had given this land to Prabhupada, they became furious. And they decided somehow or other they're going to get this land back. So on March 12th, normally it takes months for the mutation, everything to happen in the courts in Mathura. In 3 days, Prabhupada was able to get this land signed and sealed. He called the magistrate, he called the owners, he called everybody that was involved, got all the deeds handwritten by Jamuna Devi, and signed and sealed. 3 days, March 12th, the deed was in Prabhupada's hand. On March 13th, Prabhupada made a 16-foot deep hole just behind here and made the Anantashesh, the groundbreaking ceremony. So Prabhupada wasn't wasting any time. because Kashi Prasad Saraf, because so many people wanted the land, he said, I want you to build the land within 1 year, otherwise I'm going to give the land to somebody else. So Prabhupada had from 1972 to 1973. Now, in 1973, Sarabi had just come. The plans were just made. Prabhupada had an architect make a very simple design for the temple at first, just to show the Sarafs. And the construction was going on, but it wasn't to ISKCON's standard. It wasn't the way Prabhupada wanted it. Am I talking too long? With much endeavor, finally, Sarabi came, as we heard. He made the design. Prabhupada was very happy. He made the courtyard. There was very little money at that time. He made the beautiful design here for the raised darshan mandap, the sunken courtyard. And then with much endeavor from the three teams of Guru Kripa and his men, Gunarnava and Sarabi, Jamuna and Gurudas, this temple was formally open on April 20th, Ram Nomi of 1975. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.